It's Helping Hand, all things considered. Every Friday afternoon, Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that offers assistance to people with disabilities and others among the most vulnerable. I'm Dave Lawrence. This week, we're grateful to be catching up with a returning guest we've had on a number of times, Parents Inc. joining us, providing awareness, referrals, education, nurturing, therapy, support. And according to their website, hawaiiparents.org, Parents is a private nonprofit. It's been serving local families since the mid-70s, going back to 1975. And they've got a focus on the healthy growth and development of everybody in the family and prevention and treatment of child abuse and neglect. And they have an annual kickball tournament as part of their fundraising efforts. And it is April 14th in the Honolulu area in Kaneohe, and now in Hawaii Island, a two-day event, April 21st and 22nd in Hilo. And we're going to find out how those work to support their programs and the programs they offer. We welcome back Executive Director at Parents, Lisa Grew. Aloha, welcome back. Great to see you.
Thank you, Dave. Great to see you as well.
First, explain who Parents Inc. is and who you provide services to.
Well, Parents Inc. has been in Hawaii. We're a local agency for over 40 years. And as you talked about earlier, we do prevention and treatment of child abuse and neglect. We're really out there to help all parents and caregivers because we know parenting is challenging. And we don't want them to get to the point where they're actually angry and lashing out their children and harming them. So we offer support services, education, 21st century tools and techniques of how to check yourself so that you don't get to that space where you're actually harming your family and your children.
I guess the reason I ask you about defining who the services are for is because some of the services come through assignment of clients from the courts or state. Parents with open child abuse and neglect cases, this is stuff I've derived from previous interviews with Lisa and from their website, as well as partners and spouses of parents, grandparents, other caregivers. Clients end up getting referred to these programs. They're not open to the public. Talk about this kind of work that you do, which is a very important part of the piece.
Yes, yeah, so we do have state contracts with child welfare, and a lot of our clients are referred into our programs because they're already in the system for child abuse and neglect. And of course, we've been servicing those for years, and we want to continue servicing that. But what we're really focusing on is the prevention aspect, right? We want to reach out to those parents that are not in the system for abuse and make sure they never get into the system because they get the education and tools and resources they need and support systems where they don't end up in the system for abuse and neglect.
So what that says, what you're saying in a nice sort of, a nice as possible sort of way, is that everybody who you get from a state, everybody that is assigned to you, there's already been an incident of child abuse.
Yes.
That's occurred. And the volume, just to figure out the workload aspect of that so that so I understand it more, how often does the government reach out with a fresh case of some kind?
Almost daily.
Almost every single weekday?
Yes.
And when you show up on, when you show up on Monday, are there things that came in over the weekend?
Sometimes, yes.
From the government?
Yes.
And so that's the government basically saying, we have another, I'm just making sure I understand this. You correct me if I have this wrong. So that's another kid in the Aloha State who has been assaulted by some kind of caregiver, and now the government is reaching out to you to try to create a therapeutic program to help.
Absolutely. Yes. We service almost 4,000 parents and children annually.
Through that mechanism alone or just through, is that combined?
Including prevention, but the majority of it is still the child abuse and neglect treatment.
Right. So every day there's at least a case approximately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. That is, I just sometimes, you know, when you, I don't know. Sometimes it's just like, there are a lot of great things that an organization like you do. And sometimes I like just it's sobering to realize like how it really works. And so this is a nonprofit that basically the government turns to with these contracts because you have good programs that can try to help somebody who's been through something rather traumatic. And before we get into a little bit more about the organization, the programming for, it's not just the kid, right? It's also, there's instances where moms and other people have been abused besides a child, and there's also therapeutic aspect for all parties. Does it also include, there are programs that include the potential abuser too?
Right. So a lot of the clients that we get in from child welfare have multiple issues and substance abuse issues, domestic violence issues, child abuse and neglect issues. And sometimes it perpetuates, you know, from the generations. They've had that in their childhood. And now as an adult, they're perpetuating that same behavior in their own families because they've never been taught, right? They've never been taught how to be a good parent. They don't have a lot of life skills that we need today to handle stress. So that's what we come in and do. We're giving them those life skills. We're giving them tools and support systems to grow up, basically. Emotional intelligence, a lot of things that we just don't get as we grow up through school or from our own parents.
It's incredible. And so how do you guys get your, I imagine that part of the answer to how you get your funding is that the government pays you for the services they provide you, but the rest of it, so obviously, and then there's donations, you explain, and grants. And
yeah, so that's the hard part, is that the treatment side, if you're in the system for child abuse and neglect, that's covered 100% by grants contracts. However, to get prevention grants is very difficult. Most people don't want to fund prevention, ironically, unless it's happening right now. It's kind of not really something that needs to be needs to be funded immediately, kind of thing. So we really struggle getting prevention grants for parenting education and support services. So a lot of times we do rely on fundraising and donations to help support our growth of prevention programs, and that becomes difficult.
Right, and the prevention, and that's sort of, I think that's a, that seems to be the case with a lot of other preventative things. It's almost like people tend to wait until it's too late, whether it's the homeless issue or so many things. So I can understand that.
Yeah, we've seen it kind of go up and down, where all of a sudden the legislature has given all these prevention monies available when something gets really bad, when it's really maxed out. And then we do it for a few years. And then when it starts getting better, then it gets all cut again. So it's never a continuum. And we just keep going this ebb and flow. It just keeps going up and down and up and down. And we really need it to be steady, consistent, so we can really be effective.
Right. That makes sense. So for the people who, for the court side, is a different relationship than for folks on the preventative side. So are there costs for the services?
A lot of our services are free for prevention, especially if we get grants. However, we do have a Confident Parenting 9-week class for the general public that we charge $45 a participant. That's to cover materials. We do give them a curriculum binder, and they get to keep that. And it's also got worksheets in it and different things that they can refer back to.
And that's a good thing for who exactly? Parents, just new parents, any kind of parent?
Any parent or caregiver. Even if you're going to become a parent, right? It's always good to get the information before you have a child so you know what to expect.
Yeah, it seems like something you'd need a class on, huh? It's a pretty complicated endeavor.
Well, not only that, but a lot of people don't realize parenting is basic life skills, right? It's how we communicate with each other, how we discipline, how we, there's so many things that we do in life on a daily basis that matters in our parenting.
Right. There's an art to it. There's no question.
Yes.
I can imagine that. These are things, I never had children. I have fish, but I can imagine that. I'm hearing what you're saying. Be like, yeah, before you get your fish, come take this course.
We're exactly.
Teach you the important things to know. It totally makes sense.
Sometimes we get teens in there that are pregnant and having a baby.
Sure. Oh, that seems to be a major part of the puzzle. The Adopt-A-Family program, what is that?
So that's anytime, mostly it's at Christmas, where people adopt one of our families that cannot, don't have the money and the resources to have a nice Christmas, can't get their kids gifts, can't have a Christmas tree.
So it's seasonal.
It's seasonal on holidays. We have awesome donors and people that adopt families through our programs every year. So it's really nice. It's nice that they get to share a really nice holiday with their families and to mean something, and the kids don't wake up with nothing on Christmas morning.
Right. No, it's a cool thing for someone to realize they're adopting a family that has struggled with domestic violence or some other issue, and realize that that's... you know, it's a nice way of giving back, especially maybe if you've been touched by that yourself at some point in your life. On to the training and the ways that there's both professional training and DOE professional training workshops. Can you explain the difference between that, what that is?
Well, we do professional workshops in the community for those professionals that are already working with families, at-risk families. And that's just continuing kind of education, best practices. And then we also reach out to Department of Education, because teachers every day parent our children in the classroom, and they do see signs of child abuse and neglect.
Right.
And they need that education. They need to know how to recognize the signs and how to do the reporting. There's mandated reporting procedures for anyone in those kind of fields when you're dealing with children. And so what we'd like to do is reach out and give them that education so that they have a good understanding of what the process is and how to recognize it.
And the services and programs, like the parenting classes, if you can, dial in on any of those that you want to give for somebody who's listening, who's thinking, I would like to take it. What are the specifics they need to know and how that could be, you know, beneficial, especially somebody who's maybe had a difficult time. But I don't know what leads to the domestic, you know, the abuse. It's almost like, what are the things that happen? I guess frustration right. they're having, really, you know, and I guess also some of your courses, what you can explain is, I guess it helps you to deal with the challenges that come in life, which might lead to you losing your cool.
Right. And that's really significant because there is a stigmatism based around parenting education. People don't want to go take a class because they feel like, oh, now I'm a bad parent if I go take a parenting education class. And I'd like to let everyone know out there that that's not the case, that we all need that education and support and tools. Parenting is challenging. It's not an easy job. We're raising another human being. And when we have difficulty even in our own lives, and now we've got to raise another person, we need help. And myself as well. I mean, I've been in this organization at Parenting for 10 years, and I came to the organization as a single parent here in Hawaii, not having a support system, found myself dealing with temper tantrums and really not knowing how to handle that, right? And everyone gives you advice. Everyone says, she needs your love, so just hug her and love her. Or she's looking for attention, just ignore her. Or whack her, hit her. She needs to be spanked because she's behaving poorly. And it's really confusing because all of our friends and family give us all this advice and we don't really know what the right thing to do is. I decided early on that I was not going to be hitting my kids. I grew up in that environment. I didn't find it effective for me and my siblings. So I decided that I needed to get help, and I went to parenting classes to find out if there was something I didn't know or something they could teach me. It was the best experience I ever had. And it was all mixed, you know, it had a variety of different people. You learn from their peers, you find out, hey, I'm not alone. All of us are struggling at different levels of parenting, but all of us are struggling. And if we can really be open and honest about our struggles and help each other out and learn from each other and get instruction on, you know, best practices, there's scientific proof now about how hitting children and negative parenting are detrimental to their health, to so many areas of their lives. So our goal at Parents Inc. is to do positive parenting. That means not hitting. And people will challenge that. They'll say, oh, I grew up plenty of lickings and I turned out okay. But again, if you look at the scientific evidence and you show some kids turn out okay and some don't. So you're really, you're risking, you're taking that chance. You're gambling with their life.
I think the fact that you have the massive amount of state contract that you do, that they're coming to you with child abuse case after child abuse case every single day, and your advice is not to hit kids, I'm sure that it makes total sense. Well, I have no doubt that it's not fun to be hit, and I completely, you know, I get what you mean, because parenting, people have such different, and it's such a different, it's hard to, it's like they have such, you know, this is what they think works, and, you know, you discipline different other creatures, a dog or whatever, I don't know, right. But I get what you're saying, and it's just a frightening thought of all these people being hit and you know, like the amount of every day to hear that that's what you're dealing with every single day. You yes. got another call coming into your office from the government asking for help for some, and they're minors, right? They're all right. Is there an average age that these kids are going through? Or is it every age?
Well, of course, the youngest age are the most risk because they're the youngest and most vulnerable. But we're seeing a lot more teenage issues now. So it's been interesting. And what I have to say about that, hitting children, people will say children grow up disrespectful if you don't hit them. That's kind of a common theme here. And what I'd like to say about that is they don't have to be hit to be respectful. Mm. Matter of fact, usually you damage a relationship when you're hitting your child.
Seems like it.
And the thing about hitting is that you usually do it when you're angry. And that's when abuse occurs because you're very angry and you're hitting harder and lashing out in different ways than if you were calm. You would react differently.
The same with the verbal abuse when
exactly.
you're angry. Because you say things and do things when you're mad out of frustration. And
well, emotional verbal abuse is the new physical abuse.
Sure.
People are starting to abuse less physically and more mentally, emotionally.
And that kind of bullying thing is what, you know, that seems to be leading to all these suicide issues. And so that kind of mental abuse seems to be just as detrimental, if not even worse, in terms of the of a potential outcome. The classes in terms of the state, because I know we're about to talk about the event in Hilo, and obviously, so you have a are all the classes available on the other islands? How would that work?
Yes.
Okay, so Maui.
Oh, we only are on the Big Island and Oahu at this time.
Okay, so it's only, that's what I figured it was, and the Honolulu area. And that's why these two fundraising events are happening in those two communities. April 14th will be the first of them in Kaneohe, and then followed by 2 days in Hilo, April 21st and 22nd. Explain for people, these are kickball tournaments, so a chance to relive your childhood to some degree, if that was a
yes.
part of it. Not necessarily everybody, I guess, has a different thing, but for me, certainly, those red, is it red balls?
Yes, it is.
So how do people, what do they need to know in terms of like the real important nuts and bolts of getting involved? Obviously, those are the dates, but what else?
Well, first, I'd like to say that the reason we developed an annual kickball tournament as a signature event is because we're kicking off April, which is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And so our kickball tournament is to kick child abuse and neglect out of Hawaii. And the money we raise towards that goes towards our programs. 97 cents of every dollar we raise goes directly to programs. So we have a really good rate on that. The other thing is it's a family day, right? It's not, I mean, it could be for companies and employees, but a lot of families come out. It's a day to spend time with your family outdoors, enjoying a day in the park, enjoying team building, communication. You have these skills that sports requires that we don't really think about, but it's like a family, right? How do you work together? How do you build on your
so
teamwork?
So it's genre, gender and age mixed
yes.
all together on the
yes.
team. So you can have
it. Man, boy and girl, man and woman. It can be children from 8 years and up.
And how big are the 8 people? Is that what it is?
8 minimum, up to 15 maximum. And
okay.
Of course, the more the better, because especially if you start winning, it's a double elimination tournament. So if you win continuously throughout the day, you're playing a lot. Or even if you lose, you're playing a lot. But if you get into the championship games, you start at 8 in the morning, and those tend to be about 5 in the afternoon. So the more people you have, you can rotate out and you're not
sure.
all exhausted.
It's an exhausting, you're really putting yourself out there on this. And what's the dough? So how does the money part, how is this supporting? So you're, I can figure this out. So you're basically paying a fee to enter, and that fee is how you guys raise funds.
Right. So it's $300 a team.
Okay.
And it works out to be about, $32 a person with 8 minimum. We accept our last registration right before our kickball tournament, a week before.
It's $300 to get in.
$300 per team.
And that covers the whole team.
That covers the whole team.
And you need at least 8 people, any gender and age.
Yes.
So you can mix and match. And
children 8 years and older.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's the minimum. So it's got to be at least 8. So not any age.
No, yeah, they got to be 8 years old.
8 years or older. And then it can be boys and girls, at least 8 people.
Right.
So 8 is an important number to remember. And then people, other ways to support. So that's the playing part of it. And you can then be a volunteer potentially at the event to help out. Do you need some prizes for the
yes.
event? What are the other components that people could help out if they're not going to be on a team playing all day?
Right. So because it is a fundraiser, we do want people to donate and support. So we're looking for sponsors. We're also looking for team prizes, and those would consist sometimes of gift cards or whatever someone's willing to donate, because we do give first, second, and third place prizes, as well as a costume contest prize. Our teams like to dress up, whether it's costume or theme, and then there is a contest and someone wins every year and they get prizes as well.
So multiple levels of prizes people can donate prizes for.
Right.
Or multiple levels of awarding that people can donate prizes for. And volunteer, do you need specific people to just help on the day?
We do. We're always looking for refs, people that maybe have some experience in that arena.
Sport kind of thing.
Yeah, and we also need help with like the food booths and setting up and breaking down Keiki Zone. We have a awesome Keiki Zone where the kids can go hang out while the adults are playing if they're not on a team. And it's like an obstacle course, so they have a lot of fun.
What other supplies? Any specific supplies for the event that you need?
Yeah, there are different supplies we need for kickball. We kind of have a network already that we set up for certain supplies, but mostly the prizes,
is the most
donations, monetary support.
Okay.
And
So sponsorship of the event, right, or donating prizes that they can use. And so let me give contact information. If you have an idea for a prize and you're not sure if it's the right thing, or you have an idea for something that they could use, and you just want to check with them, take note of this information. In the Honolulu area, 808-235-0255. In Hilo, 808-934-9552. Online, you can register and obviously learn much more both about the programs and this mechanism they have to support them at hawaiiparents.org. You can send Lisa an email yourself if you have a specific question. As I was just indicating, lisagrulx@hawaiiparents.org. Let me spell that. LGROULX at hawaiiparents.org. I've got all of their contact information, the full interview, the radio feature, and all of our other Helping Hand guests waiting for you at hawaiipublicradio.org. What else about the mission or the fundraiser that is popping into your head right now thinking, oh, we didn't mention the thing?
Yeah, I wanted to mention that we do have some really great support from the community that come out and do teams every year. The media comes out and supports us. So we have Hawaii News Now does a team. Star Advertiser does a team. We also have... last year, KOHON, Justin Cruz had did a team. And we're really calling out to like HPD and the firefighters. So we like to pair up the teams against each other, right?
Oh, wow.
It makes it a little more exciting. So anyone that wants to do that, come out as a company and, you know, pay for their employees to come out. It's a really good event. They enjoy it. They keep coming back year after year, as well as our family teams.
We could not find eight people last year. We tried so hard at the thing. I was on there with my... With Jose, there was a couple others. We were close, but...
And you can reach out to friends and family as well. So sometimes employees or companies will pay for the employees, but if they don't have eight employees that will do it, then they can bring on their friends and family to, you know, complete the team.
There's a lot of ways that people can help, and obviously you can always show up there and support.
Exactly. It's open to the public. You can come, you know, cheer on your team or other teams you know or that you don't know. You can just come out and just be part of the event.
Right. Just have an excuse to have some fresh air.
Yes.
In a specific spot with our buddy, the executive director at Parents, Lisa Grew. And thanks for doing all this stuff, especially on behalf of children who don't know where to go, and especially the ones that the government had to get them into your care. Yeah. That really says a lot about... how delicate they needed to be handled. So good luck handling them, and thanks for being there for those kids in crisis. I appreciate it.
Thank you.